Hour number two, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezevic, Nick Kieser hanging out on this Tuesday. We'll have Steve Miller Band tickets to give away later in the hour, as he'll be at First Bank Amphitheater April 30th, presented by Green Trees Company. So be listening for your chance to win those. But yesterday, the Predators had their end-of-season press conference that included General Manager David Poile, who handed the keys over to incoming general manager Barry Trotz and head coach John Hines. And it was a press conference that lasted a little over an hour, as I kind of thought it would. Most of the questions were directed to Barry Trotz and kind of trying to get an idea of his vision, you know, some to John Hines. And I told David Poile after, I said, that's probably the easiest press conference you've ever done. And he laughed and I said, yeah, because he's, you know, he had a few things, obviously, to talk about, but now everybody's looking at Barry and what Barry is going to do. And, you know, I was wondering who was going to ask it. It's a little awkward because John's sitting up there, but it was Paul Skrbina of the Tennessean that ultimately asked the question to Barry Trotz.
I think the answer might be obvious, but first of all, is the plan to keep John at least going into next season as the coach of this team?
Well, John has a contract, and as I said, this will be a process. And I'm going to evaluate, you know, from the players to the staff to John. He's that we're going to talk about his plan for next year and go from there. That's the process, and you got to respect the process. It's the same process that David has gone through with me for a long time. So I don't think he was able to answer that question right away when you asked me that.
So there are a lot of things that impressed me yesterday with Barry Trotz in that role. And look, I'm not surprised at all. You could tell he was ready for that question. Mm-hmm. He knew how he was going to answer it. But when I heard the answer, I kind of went, all right, that was a little more noncommittal than I was expecting, especially with him sitting right there next to John Hines. But I thought it was a calculated answer because as Barry Trotz navigates this, one thing that people have to keep in mind is, yes, he is going to be the general manager. David Poile's still involved. And I think Barry is trying to play this very delicately, play this right of that, you know, of course, he's going to put his stamp on things. He's going to make changes. But there's a process behind all of it. And, you know, I can sort of relate it to when I took over as the program director here. I knew there were things that I wanted to do that were my ideas. And there were things that were in place that I liked. And then there were things that were in place that I didn't like. And it was no disrespect to Ryan Porth, my predecessor, but it was like, okay, now it's my ship. So I'm going to run it my way. And I think Barry is going to do that, but it's a step-by-step deal. So when it comes to the coach, he should have a conversation. He should continue this evaluation. I loved that he said, I want to hear John's plan for next year. Absolutely. And so I think ultimately John Hines is going to be back as the head coach. Now, you know, you can – I've heard other people throw this out. You can – certainly make the argument if by midseason things aren't looking good that they make a change then. So that's fair. But I think that he's going to get an opportunity to be the head coach of this team. Now, what I definitely think is going to happen is I think the staff's going to look different. I do believe there will be changes on the coaching staff.
So I agree with Max, and you asked him this question to start off his segment. I didn't really turn my head or my ears perked up at the answer from Barry Trotz. I think my ears perked up more at the question.
Sure.
Just because John Hines was sitting there and they all three were sitting together. I think John Hines will be the coach next year. I think Barry Trotz's answer is similar to the ones that we've seen of Mike Vrabel, right? You know, well, he's under contract. Ryan Tannehill's under contract. He's our quarterback, right? I mean, it is the easiest way, especially when a coach or a player is under contract, that you can answer that question without making things awkward, I personally believe. This person or player is under contract right now,
I know, but it's also a little bit of a cop-out answer when they say that. Like, yeah, you know, I've given Vrabel crap for, well, he's under contract, you know? So, but Barry, I liked how Barry answered it.
But he said he was under contract, so wouldn't you give him crap for that then?
No, yeah. I don't. That's what I'm saying. Like, when he first started the answer and he says, well, John's under contract, I'm like, uh-oh, you know, here we go. But then the follow-up to it, I was like, okay.
But don't coaches and GMs sit down after the end of every single season and they say, okay, what's our plan for next year?
Yep.
So I think that's kind of why, too, I didn't look at this like, oh gosh, you know, he's sitting right next to him and I don't know if his job's secure. I think by them all having a press conference together yesterday, that signified and signaled.
Right. But let me ask you this. If you and I are doing a press conference about the show, and somebody asks me, you know, hey, does this mean Michelle Knezevic is going to be your co-host, you know, for a new season? And I say, well, you know, we're going to trust the process, and you know, she's under contract. We're going to sit down and talk about what she thinks and about the show moving forward. How would that make you feel? You wouldn't. I don't think that would give you warm and fuzzy like, oh yeah, I'm good. If I said, well, hell yeah, Michelle's done a great job. She's going to be my co-host for years to come.
Yeah, but you've also, I mean, Barry Trotz has only worked with him for a very, very small amount of time. You know, you and I have worked together for the last, well, more closely now, ever since you took over as PD and we started the show. But, you know, 2 years, you've been in the office every day seeing me. And I think, you know, from Barry's perspective, yeah, he has been here the last couple of weeks of the season and the vibe has completely changed, but it's also not fair for him to not address what happened at the beginning of the season, you know.
Bingo.
And I think, too, along the same lines is, you know, there's nothing really that you can compare to being a coach of a professional team or a general manager of a professional sports team, because your performance is single-handedly based off of your team's success. And it doesn't matter if a player doesn't really, you know, want to get up and give everything, because you can't fire the entire team.
Yeah.
And John Hines, well, maybe some of it was his fault, maybe some of it wasn't his fault. You know, I believe that you have to give him a good chunk of credit, because even though people want to give the credit to Carl Taylor and say, well, he developed all of these young guys, I mean, John Hines was the one coaching them night in and night out.
Sure.
You know, just because they were being successful at the AHL level and Carl Taylor was coaching them, I mean, the AHL is so incredibly different. You have a couple days in between days in between games, you know, the physicality, just the level of play, the mentality. And then for them to come up to the Predators, have so much pressure on them to, no, I know people weren't expecting them to make the playoffs, but be in a spot where you were right there until the last week of the season.
Sure.
You have to give him credit. But you also, too, have to put a portion of blame on him to why weren't your veteran players performing to the level that they were last year.
And then that, right. So I give John a ton of credit for the last 20 games and where this team ended up. But you're right. My question is, and it's been discussed, you know, like, hey, what happened in the first, you know, 50? I mean, that's the concern. And why? Because there were times where I didn't feel like the veterans quit on him. I felt like they were kind of loafing around. And, you know, that is on the coach. I mean, you got to get the most out of your players. Now, the players have to have a want to do it, too, but so I agree, and I think Barry's going to address that. Barry's going to talk about that. Like, hey, you know, what's your plan to get the most out of Duchesne, Johansson, Forsberg? Let's name names. I mean, because those three, if those three play like they did the year before, not even having career years, just be good.
Yeah.
And then you mix in some of these young guys that we've talked about, like Novak, like Cody Glass, throw them in there. Yossi's Yossi. Saros is Saros. You do that and you get all that to come together? That's a playoff team.
No, Chase, 100%. And I think the reason I just scratch my head and question, you know, what changed? Because John Hines was able to get through to them last year when Duchesne and Forsberg were having career years. You know, Yossi had a career year. You know, Johansson had a pretty solid year. The team in the offseason made moves to get better with the addition of Ryan McDonough, with the addition of Nino Niederreiter. What changed? And right. They brought that up in the press conference yesterday. I think it was David Poile who brought it up, or maybe it was John Hunt. No, it was definitely David Poile. And he said, you know, we had one of the top five power plays in the league last year, and we had the same guys on it this year. What changed? And I think that's where, you know, from the outside looking in, it's really hard to put blame on one singular person, put blame on the coach, or put blame on a player because, you know, we don't know what is happening day in and day out in the locker room. But I will say, you know, another message that came out from that press conference yesterday was we need our best players to be playing their best hockey.
Yeah.
And when you're getting paid that amount and when you are top at your position in the league, it's your responsibility every single day to go out there and play that way. And they mentioned, too, you know, when we got a lot of these young guys in, the roster was rejuvenated. There was a better vibe. These kids were playing for their life. They were playing for something out there. So whether is that culture in the locker room? Was something not clicking? But all of it plays a role into, you know, if John Hines will have a job here moving forward. Because at the end of the day, when you are the coach of a professional football team or professional hockey team, I'm thinking of Vrabel, hockey, football, professional sports team, it's your responsibility.
As we move forward, there's something that I think Barry Trotz he's going to be really good at, maybe even better than David Poile. And I'll explain that coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Also, given the circumstances of everything that's happened, you know, since you've been here, you know, in February, how crucial is that for you guys to be able to work that closely together for you to be able to get a head start on that evaluation?
Well, it's really important. I think relationships are critical in this business. Relationships, you know, me and John, we didn't know each other too well. And I've got to know John. I know he's got a great personality. We get along great. And also you talk about the hockey side. We're hockey nerds. We talk systems. We talk that type of stuff. There's so many things. And obviously, that's been my life forever. And so when you have good people and you know good people, it's really easy to make really good evaluations.
Barry Trotz yesterday at their press conference, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And there's something that I think he's going to be really good at. So, you know, I like using analogies. I kind of feel like there are 32 GMs in the league that are sitting around a giant poker table. And that's what this is, that it's a poker game. And David Poile has obviously been pretty good at it because he's been sitting at that table for 40 years. 25 with Nashville, or mm-hmm. 20 longer than that. But there have been times where, and you know, people can make this argument that, okay, he sold off at the trade deadline. He's put Barry in a really good position to succeed, and that is all 100% true. But then there are those same people that go, yeah, but he could have done it 2 years ago, and this could have already been sped up. Okay, yeah, I mean, there's an argument for that.
Could have, should have, would have in life every day, people.
If, you know, I could see it both ways. And I think that's where there are times where maybe David held on a little too long to certain things, like whether it was a player. Like, I always looked at Colin Wilson. Colin Wilson was, you know, okay. Colin Wilson could have been a lot better. I've heard Colin Wilson admit that he had applied himself more, he could have been a lot better. But there was a time where, you know, I think the rumors were out there that the Preds could move off of Colin Wilson and probably gotten a lot more for him. And then they waited and they waited. And then we had this playoff Colin Wilson and regular season Colin mm-hmm. Wilson. And I think Barry Trotz, knowing that, you know, one, this whole 25 years as a GM thing is a rarity. And, you know, you're probably not going to happen again. Barry's also a lot older than David was when David became the GM. I think Barry's going to be very good at the poker game and the chess game, whatever analogy you want to use. And with this whole thing with Hines, like, it's going to be, I think, a short leash. He's show me results. Okay, I like your plan. Show me. And if you don't see the results, moving on. Same goes for players. Like, if Duchesne and Johansson, I mean, he has put them on notice. If you go back and you really listen,
yeah,
especially Johansson, they're on notice. Like, hey, we don't have time to wait around on you anymore.
Well, I mean, one of the quotes that I took away from yesterday was when asked about the guys with injuries, I mean, specifically talking about Ryan Johansson, he said, you know, I want this team to get faster, and that is not one of his strong suits. And coming off an injury like the one he's coming off of that has to do with your foot, you know, I think he used the analogy of he's chasing a moving train, right? He can catch it if he wants to, but we need to see that work ethic. We need to see you do everything in your power to get back to better than what you were, better than what you were at the beginning of this season. You got to get faster because that's the direction we're going in. And if you're not there to catch up to it, we're still moving forward and we're not stopping. I think that that was a huge takeaway I took away from yesterday. I think you're right on Barry Trotz because he has such a long experience in coaching and he's regarded as one of the best. He'll be a Hall of Fame coach someday in the NHL is that he can see these players in a different light and he can, you know, go down and watch what the coach is doing. And from his perspective, he can say, okay, maybe try this or do not that he wants to do that. But when he's doing this evaluation process on, okay, you know, is this somebody I think that it can be shaken out of and they just need more reps, need to mold with the team more. Or if he just looks at him and during the evaluation process thinks, you know what? No. It's time. I know what we can get for him. So I think that he has an advantage over some general managers who've never been in a coaching position like he has because he can see things totally different. And to your point about having John Hines and having players on a short leash, I think also, too, it's an interesting perspective because these players view him as, okay, one of the best coaches to do it in the NHL. And, you know, John Hines, a younger coach, really respects him from the coaching standpoint. You're not saying that they didn't to David Poile because David Poile had been a general manager for so long, but it's a different type of respect because he is such a hockey nerd and he really does know the X's and the O's. And sometimes when somebody moves into a position like that, the players and the coaches, it can open their eyes to something different and maybe be open to learning and seeing things differently than they have been traditionally done.
Well, and here's the other thing too. Barry Trotz could make John Hines a better head coach.
Of course.
Because I mean you're talking to a Hall of Famer. And there are some coaches, prime example, because I used this when this happened. I thought when the Vols hired Jeremy Pruitt and had Philip Fulmer as the AD, that's going to be a really good position for Jeremy Pruitt to be in because he can lean on the experiences of a Hall of Fame coach who's there as the AD. The problem is the Hall of Fame coach that's the AD still wanted to be the coach. That's the problem. Barry Trotz, I believe, is like, I'm good. I'm done coaching. I want a Stanley Cup as a head coach. I'm ready to move on to the
had
next thing.
Had plenty of opportunities after if the he Islanders wanted to be on a bench, he wanted to be.
If he wanted to be on a bench right now, he could be on a bench. If he wanted to be on a bench next year, he could be on a bench. Like, I think everybody knows that. Barry can now mentor John Hines, Carl Taylor, Dan Hinote, any of these guys that are on the coaching staff. He can do that, and they can learn something from him. And I think that's what he wants to do. Barry's a teacher. Barry likes to teach. And so that's why I believe – this is going to be a really, really, really good thing. And he's not going to be afraid to make the moves that need to be made to get this team to be a contender as quickly as he possibly can. The other angle on this is with Bill Haslam coming in, I've never been more excited about a franchise than I am right now because it's like, you know,
when the Braves won the World Series.
Well, okay. Yes. but I mean like of looking ahead to the future. You know, because the foundation is there. David Poile has built one heck of a foundation, and if they announced tomorrow that they were going to put a David Poile statue up next to Pekka, I'd be fine with it. I would have no issue with it. So he deserves every accolade that he's going to get.
They'll just put one in Barry's office.
Yeah, they're just constantly watching over him. But I think that now it's like old blood but new blood all mixed together. And Barry's coming in rejuvenated. Like, listening to him yesterday, I was fired up. I'm like, I don't even work for the team full time. Like, but like, I'm ready to run through a wall. Let's go.
Well, and the interesting part about this all, Chase, I think you laid it out really nicely, about this organization is David Poyle didn't get fired in middle of the season or didn't, you know, at the end of the year say, hey, you know, thank you, but we're good for next year. We want to go in a different direction. And they even mentioned that, you know, they're like, it's pretty rare in the NHL that you get this nice transition period. And I actually really care about this organization and I really care about Barry Trotz. And I got to help pick who would take over this organization. And you know what, Barry? I want to help you succeed. I want this transition to be great for you. So here's all the moves we're going to make. You're going to have your hand in it. And we're looking at where this team is right now, just shy of the playoffs, just barely missed it last week of the season. Very close. A lot of young blood. Some of the veteran players, you know, being able to finally heal and what could look like next year. And some of the younger guys who are in Milwaukee now. And then I look to the other side of the town with the Tennessee Titans and J-Rob getting fired midseason, the team never winning a game again, injuries upon injuries, you know, bad contracts, Kevin Byers' contract that just kept getting restructured and pushed back. And Rand Carthon is kind of coming in like, okay, I got to put some Band-Aids on some of this stuff. I got to cut some people, like the Bud Dupree contract, right? I mean, he came into a situation that is a lot different than if you look at the Nashville Predators situation of Barry really being set up with David Poyle, because David Poyle had, we all know the Poyles are planners. I love when David Poyle says that. He set him up for success because he knew that it was his time to move on. Whereas you look at the Tennessee Titans and you think, okay, yes, you're getting a new general manager who hasn't been one before yet, but he also has to patch up holes that are on this roster.
He's got to fix some stuff
before he can really, you know, make the moves in the roster the way he wants it to look like.
Right. And the other thing too is like Rand Carthon's coming in with no connection to J-Rob. So it's like he just does his thing. Barry obviously has a major connection to David Poyle and they've worked so well together over the years. But, and this is important, and I have a feeling David has told him this, don't do it the way I did it. Do it the way that you're going to do it. Like you have to make it yours. And you know, I think sometimes it's hard. Like if you're taking over for somebody that you're close to, I mean, I went through this of like when I knew there was something that, you know, we had under Ryan that I'm like, okay, I don't love that. I would not do it that way. I had, you know, I was like, well, but that's my friend. That's a guy that I've worked with. Now I'm changing it. And it, I mean, even he was like, do it your way. It's yours now. So make it yours. And Barry has to be able to do that. To say like, okay, I know we did it this way with David, but we're going to do it this way under me, and I have to be confident in that, and everybody then supports it. And I believe he's going to do that, and I think he's going to do it very well. So I'm looking forward to what is to come for sure with this new era with the Nashville Predators as the keys were handed over yesterday. I think it's more of a key fob now, but was handed over yesterday.
David Poyle had some great one-liners yesterday.
He was funny yesterday.
I absolutely love the quote where I think Darren asked him about, you know, what was it like when the tribute video, he said, I didn't know what to do with my hands. And, you know, I'm sure most people have been in a situation, whether it's singing happy birthday or whether it's, you know, being put on the spot and you're like, oh, gosh, I don't know what to do right now. Like, happy birthday for me. I never know what to do with my hands. It's one of those things where if people are singing to you and you're sitting at a dinner, you kind of just smile. People are taking pictures of you. So honestly, David Poyle, I could not imagine being in that situation. I really wouldn't know what to do with my hands. I guess just smile and wave, but it gets a little old and you're like, okay, I've been a minute and a half of doing this now.
Now what do I do?
Now what do I do?
Coming up next, Jonathan Hutton usually joins us on Mondays at 10:30. Had to move today. We'll talk to him from Outkick, get his thoughts on the Titans and the draft that is just a little over a week away. We'll do that here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Kieser here on this Tuesday. Usually on Monday at 10:30, we chat with Jonathan Hutton of Outkick. He, of course, is presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Visit Blend Bar in the heart of downtown Nashville today. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars is luxury redefined. Hutton joins us now. Hut, what's up, my man? How you doing?
Hey, Hutton.
Hey, Michelle. Hey, Chase. Hope things are well.
Yeah, doing fantastic. As we're a little over a week away from the draft, I want to start, though, with this news that came out this morning that's not related to the Titans, but Bills GM Brandon Bean told reporters that DeMar Hamlin has seen three specialists and all have declared him fully cleared. He is working out and preparing to play. How amazing is that?
It's incredible. I mean, I'll never forget the scene of just the uncertainty of whether or not he was alive. And I mean, in fact, it was all but certain he was dead. You know, that was the assumption as we watched ESPN and the national coverage of that. And then from that Monday and then the following Friday, when everything, you know, the news kind of flipped on the optimism, was crazy, just nuts. And, you know, I maintained on that Tuesday morning, Jace, the safest place, it sounds crazy, the safest place that he could have been to suffer a heart condition is on the field,
yeah,
inside of a stadium, because they have the best of the best. They have different cardiologists. They have first responders, and they are literally right there. Had that been any other place for any other person walking down a sidewalk or, you know, just going about your day in a grocery store, chances are you're not making it. And that's what's so – he's so fortunate because of where he was. The sport he was playing played a factor, but so did the stadium where he suffered that issue.
Yeah, so really, really cool news to see that this morning. All right, Hutt, you've covered the Titans for a long time. You've obviously, you know, worked for the team and Titans Radio and been around them, and you know how fans can be. they're fans for a reason. But when I look at all these mock drafts, I'm seeing more and more that have the Titans, whether they stay at 11 or they move up or what have you, they somehow walk away with a quarterback. So the fan voice inside me, you know, starts kind of getting in that mode of, okay, all right, they're going to go find their guy. This is what they're going to do. How do you think fans are going to react if they don't? If they end up going the non-sexy pick and they get an offensive lineman with 11 or somewhere around that, what do you think the reaction is going to be?
Well, I mean, Chase, this team has so many different holes, right, across the roster, especially on offense. So I think the reaction is going to be, okay, let's see where we're headed. What's the lukewarm reaction before we buy into, okay, another offensive lineman? But I think the fans know as much as anybody, this team on the offensive line is the way we would say their identity is built right now on offense. It's the offensive line. And right now that means they don't have an identity. Let's just be frank here. That must be an upgrade. But the quarterback, you're right. The quarterback has been the discussion because it has been a discussion since last year when we knew the cap hit on Tannehill. And the quarterback is the discussion for every team, especially in the AFC. When you start to look at who's winning and who's not, when you start to look at the gauntlet of what you have to do to get to the Super Bowl. And Tannehill got close with an AFC championship game, but that was a Derrick Henry-led team in a year where they had an exceptional group of offensive weapons and an offensive line that was amongst the one of the better ones in the league, and everyone was clicking on all cylinders. That is not the case over the last year and a half. And so they've got to get back to what that version of the Titans offense looked like. And it doesn't necessarily have to be Ryan Tannehill. I'm on board with drafting the quarterback just like the fans are, okay? I'm not trading up to 3 from 11 currently to do that for the price tag. I know some would, but as you factor in, and if I've got another 60 seconds on this, when you factor in where this team is right now, and what you would have to give up to move up to three. If it's the same price tag as what the San Francisco 49ers did for Trey Lance, you swap first round picks, you give up a first round and a third round next year, and then you give up another first round the following year. So the quarterback that you're going to have, hypothetically, would not have a first round pick to pair with him until 2026. That just doesn't fit where this roster is, because this roster isn't chock full of players on rookie contracts, cheaper contracts. And I think they're better served to wait and see what happens. Schefter's trying to float this out there that we're not going to see the run on quarterbacks to begin this draft. Maybe, maybe not. But if not, that's going to push players down to the Titans. And if the quarterbacks make a run early, I'll tell Titans fans too, Chase, that's okay, because
right,
you're going to get a very good player pushed your way. And this is a very, very good draft for offensive tackles, a very good draft for pass rushers, and a very good draft for corners.
Host of Hot Mike, Jonathan Hutton, is on with us. Jonathan, how do you view the Jalen Hurts historic contract that was released yesterday, and how do you think that that'll impact future quarterback contracts for players such as Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, and obviously the list goes on and on and on?
It's going to impact them because they're about to be, individually, the next highest paid player in the National Football League. The interesting one is Lamar Jackson, right? But start with Burrow. I think Burrow should go last. So, I think Burrow should go last. I think
sit back, kick your feet up, and you just wait.
Smoke Joe that cigar.
Hey, if we're just chilling at the bar at Yeehaw and Old Smoky right now, the three of us, are we all in consensus saying the group we're talking about, Burrow's number one?
Yes, absolutely,
100%.
Okay.
So Burrow's going to be the highest paid player in the NFL by the time the season kicks off. That's the assumption. Jalen Hurts, from where he was, and then where he was the national championship game, went to Oklahoma, ends up starting as a backup, but then in the NFL becomes the highest paid player in the NFL for contract number two, is extraordinary. And he earned it. I think $175 million is the guarantee for injury. I think that's a key number for a future contract for these guys too, for him. And as you look forward, Justin Herbert, I think, the Chargers would be smart to go ahead and get in line and get that done, because what that's going to do, the contracts look huge right now, and it's going to end up pushing them down. By the time we get to 2025 or maybe even 2024, where Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen are currently are like fifth and sixth in pay. And a year from now, they will get a restructure. And then they will become the highest paid player in the NFL again, because my money's on one of those two going deep in the playoffs. And then Burrow would already be there and the money would look right. So these guys are going to set another restructure for Mahomes and Allen, and Burrow should go last because he would remain in the top tier with those two guys, and his contract, not Watson's, would end up being the one that everyone would look at.
Jonathan Hutton is on with us. Jonathan, switching to college athletics a little bit, a big story that came out regarding NIL was one of Syracuse's top donors decided to not fund any of their NIL incentives because of a disagreement with the chancellor. How do you foresee NIL just impacting the movement of players in college athletics as a whole moving forward, considering there still is no set of rules or regulations from the NCAA since, I guess you could say, the toothpaste went out of the tube?
Yeah, and this is an interesting story in Syracuse.
Oh, believe me, I know him when he would bring Tom Brady and to games. The infamous Mike Vrabel FaceTime with Tom Brady was at a Syracuse basketball game when he was deciding to go to Tampa. So it's a big deal around.
He brought Drake there once, didn't
he?
So here's the deal. This guy gives about $2 million, and Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong on the numbers. He gives about $2 million in name, image, likeness to the basketball team. And the chancellor, for whatever reason, doesn't like the look of him bringing celebrities to the sideline, to the baseline. I don't know why, But he this guy has been doing that. And I think this is more, and maybe I'm dead wrong. Maybe I'm too naive. This is more about Boeheim not being the mediator than anything else to me. Hmm. As soon as Boeheim is out, this happens. And this is the, and there's nothing wrong with this. Don't take this the wrong way. You know, people like Chase, who are the brainiacs. This is more like the academic side versus the athletic side to me battling than it is NIL and big money boosters. This guy could be a John Ruiz for Syracuse. And Syracuse could be a big player in that. They've got that guy. He didn't even go to their school. He did not attend Syracuse. Yeah. He's just a Syracuse fan wanting to help out. And they're telling him, hey, calm down. Stop making us look bad, quote unquote, by bringing celebs to our basketball games. It's just kind of a dumb reaction for a guy who could go anywhere, and he's choosing to go. And to my knowledge, he's not being obnoxious with it. He's just on TV all the time representing Syracuse, and the chancellor doesn't like it all that much.
No, you're
that's
you're,
that's how I take it.
You're completely right. And the funny thing is once NIL became legal, I mean, this was happening way, way, way before NIL became legal. Now it's a problem, but the celebrities were showing up far, far before that. Just quickly, Hutton, as we round out, do you foresee NIL being, you know, a problem in the academics versus the athletics in colleges moving forward, just kind of as a broad picture type thing?
I guess it could. I haven't heard the student athlete term thrown out there recently. You know, they're expanding the playoff. That at one point the argument was, oh, the kids need to go home. You know, they need to spend time with their families during fall break after some really difficult finals in their schedule to get ready for. You know, the upcoming spring season and semester. No one's mentioning stuff like that anymore. No, these guys are, I think eventually we will see a branch off of the haves and the have nots for the most part. And, from a Title IX perspective, it's going to be interesting because I think, we could see some, and I'm looking in the deep down the line here. Could a football program just become a football club? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a rugby club at MTSU that doesn't count against the Title IX restrictions and requirements. You don't have to match that with another women's sport because it's not a part of the quote-unquote athletic department. Well, the college football playoff is not underneath the NCAA umbrella. It's its own entity. It's not like the NCAA tournament. It has its own staff and crew. I wonder if football gets to a point like that overall, and then we begin to really see the haves and the have-nots. And you're either in or you're underneath a structure that is governed by the NCAA. There has to be some give and take from both ends because it's so far out of the bag, and the teams up top, they're not giving anything back because they're the ones making and determining, in some cases, state law. Just ask Texas A&M.
Yeah, it's continuing to be fascinating to watch this evolve. Hutt, appreciate it as always. We'll be listening 2 to 5 today on 94.9 The Fan with you and Chad, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. But look forward to talking next week.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, guys. I'm about to hop in the car, and I'll have you tuned in.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Jonathan Hutton from OutKick joins us every week, usually on Mondays at 10:30. But joined us today, brought to you by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. I told you earlier we're going to give you a chance to win tickets to see the Steve Miller Band that is going to be coming to our city at First Bank Amphitheater on April 30th. This contest is presented by Green Trees Company, a family-owned CBD and cannabis company in Hendersonville, and online at greentreescompany.com. But you must tell Nick Kieser the answer to this question. We talked about quarterbacks, the 2020 draft. Obviously, Jalen Hurts was a second-round pick in the 2020 draft. There were three quarterbacks taken in the top six in that draft. Joe Burrow won overall, then Tua at 5, Justin Herbert at 6. But there was another quarterback taken at the end of the first round. Tell Nick Kieser who that is, 615-737-1025. First person to do that will win a pair of tickets to see the Steve Miller Band coming up April 30th at First Bank Amphitheater. 615-737-1025. It's Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063, the game. Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063, the game. Chase McKay and Michelle Knezvik. The reporter Nick Kieser with you. Did we get an answer, Nick, to our question?
Yes, we did.
And it was?
The illustrious Jordan Love.
Uh-huh. Texter of the text line says, and I'm picking on you, totally picking on you, says, Mac Jones, I don't want any tickets. And I go, well, good, because that's not the answer. It's the next year. And they go, oh, yeah, right. It's confusing because, like, we were talking about with Jalen Hurts earlier and, like, okay, who all was in that draft? And I'm like, well, that was Burrow. Now, the Titans really had great pick that year with Isaiah Wilson, let me tell you. Ooh, that's worked out well.
Hard not to forget that one.
I know. But that was just such a weird – I was looking at that draft.
Well, it was throughout COVID, too, like, kind of after it, so – it was easy to – I mean, it's just a blur that entire time, to be honest. And I feel like those 2 years also meshed together, Chase. So when we were talking about it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's how – that was that draft. And then the other draft was the Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Justin Fields. That was the other one.
So there are four – there are four players in the first – that were drafted in the first round that are not in the league. Now, Jeff Gladney in Minnesota unfortunately passed away, so he's one of them. Isaiah Wilson – the Titans, and then both picks by the Raiders, Henry Ruggs and Damon Arnett.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I think both were because of legal issues.
Henry Ruggs definitely was. I'm not sure.
I can't remember with Arnett. There was something with him, but I can't remember exactly what it was. But, yeah, so that was the 2020 draft for sure. Real quick. I wanted to touch on this because I know Nick saw it last night and you've seen the video. I was watching the Dallas Stars and the Minnesota Wild in the playoffs. They're officially underway in the NHL, and there was a hit in the second period. Is that when it was? I think.
What did you say? Sorry.
Second period, when the hit was in the Stars.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the second period. But Joe Pavelski. Falls. I mean, he gets leveled, and it was Dubo with the hit, and he falls to the ice, and it was similar to Forsberg that when he fell to the ice, and he went airborne, fell to the ice, he hit his head on the ice. He was wobbly, out for the rest of the game, might be out for the rest of the series. The officials huddle up, they call it a 5-minute major, which they were saying on the broadcast that okay, call the 5-minute major because when you do that, you can review it.
Yeah.
And so they did, and they reviewed it, and they determined that it wasn't a major, and so made it a 2-minute, and then actually Dallas ends up getting hit with a misconduct because obviously a brouhaha happened after that with an instigator and all that stuff. But it was very, very close, and it's something that, you know, I know people have been kind of debating of, well, it looked dirty. I think it was a tick late. It was a tick late on the hit. And obviously it was high, a little high to the head. But I don't view it as it was a dirty play. I just think it was really, really, really close.
I'm on the same page as you, Chase. I watched it a couple times when you sent me the video. And I think, too, the unfortunate part is that the Stars player, was skating towards him pretty fast in their momentum of – at the point when he was skating towards him and then jumping up and the shoulder hitting the perfect spot and then him going airborne,
right.
It was the momentum of them heading together. I don't think it was a dirty hit or a, you know, I'm going to try to hurt you here. It was a hockey hit, like you said, might have been a tick late.
The result.
Might have been high on the shoulder, but the result of him going airborne and the momentum banging into each other and then the head hitting the ice. Scary scene, of course. But, you know.
The outcome, I think, looked worse than the actual play was. It was close. I mean, you can make an argument that they could have gone either way with it. But it was a bang-bang play. I like that they They called it the 5-minute major so they could look at it.
Yeah, I agree.
And get it right and slow it down. And then ultimately, you know, I think it was the right call. But I know that there is, and Caroline Willie and D-Mace are going to talk about this later, of, you know, is that they're trying to take hits like this out of sports, out of the NFL, out of the NHL. Is this a, okay, it's the playoffs, let them play? Or did they really get it right? Because, I mean, Joe Pavelski's probably out for the series. Like, I mean, he didn't know where the hell he was when he was going on and needed help getting off the ice. So I think it's going to be an interesting discussion, you know, as we move on here, because, you know, the playoff hockey, the intensity goes up. It's fun. Like, I was watching the games last night. Like, it's awesome to watch. But with hits like that, you know, you obviously don't want to see a guy get hurt. And what, where's the line?
No, yeah, I completely agree, Chase. And I think you can look at two situations quickly. You know, you look at the intensity of also the NBA playoffs right now and the ejection Draymond Green got. That was purposely stomping on the Kings player, trying to hurt him. He gets ejected. You know, I look at this hockey play of the sport is completely different. It's very, very incredibly physical. And I agree with you. I don't think it was too egregious the hit, but I think the outcome and just the way it all happened made it look a lot worse. You obviously hope that he's okay, probably is out of the series with some sort of head injury, but just tough all around.
Tough all around indeed. That is going to do it for us today, but don't you go anywhere. Caroline Willie and D-Mace is coming up next because Caroline can't stand the idea of the Titans drafting this particular quarterback. They will tell you who. Coming up next, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.